This paid commercial may not represent the views of Hubbard Broadcasting Incorporated or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions of this broadcast are solely those of individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
Welcome to Off the Shelf with Roger Waldron of the Coalition for Government Procurement. Off the Shelf gives a voice to commercial service and product companies selling in the federal market. Roger speaks to members and government officials about procurement policy trends, innovations, and debates. Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Now, your host, Roger Waldron.
Today, my guest on Off the Shelf is Beth Farrell. Beth is a partner at McKenna Long & Aldridge, LLP, here in Washington, D.C., and Beth brings extensive experience dealing with, a recurring topic. It's fiscal law issues and just how the government's funded, how budgets work, sequestration, the whole nine yards. Beth, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Roger.
Well, I'm looking forward to our conversation today. It's deja vu all over again with regard to these fiscal challenges we face and deadlines and that sort of thing. So I guess first, can you sort of describe how we got to where we are right now?
Right. The federal government runs on money, just like everybody else, and executive agencies don't have authority to spend money unless that money has been appropriated by Congress. So Congress has to approve the money going to the agencies, and then the agencies get to spend it. And agencies have appropriations that are provided, multi-year, indefinite appropriations, and annual appropriations. And when we talk about the shutdown, we're talking about annual appropriations. I mean, normally what you would expect for a fiscal year is for Congress to get together and enact a series of appropriations bills that fund all of the agencies for an entire fiscal year. When they are unable to do that, if they want to fund the government in increments, they do so by means of continuing resolutions. And as long as there is a continuing resolution in place, the government can continue to operate. If there is a lapse in funding, meaning there is a period where there is no continuing resolution in place, the government has to shut down with certain exceptions. And that's where we are right now. We don't have a continuing resolution in place for fiscal year 2014. October 1st starts the beginning of the fiscal year. So with no annual appropriations bills passed by Congress and no continuing resolution, the federal government doesn't have annual appropriations to use for their day-to-day operations.
Right. And, in that regard, are shutdowns, how often has this happened before? Is this something that, I know you've done some work on this, and I know you like to say deja vu all over again, government shutdown, here we go again. So how often does this happen? How common is this?
You know, it happens a lot more than people think. Back in the 70s and 80s, there were a series of shutdowns. Most of them were not very long in duration, a couple of hours, a couple of days. In October 1990, there was a three-day shutdown, but again, that was over a Columbus Day holiday weekend, so there wasn't much of an impact. The biggest shutdown we've had so far happened in 1995, a three-week period between the middle of December and the beginning of January. And then after that, we had a period where in 2011, if you recall, we had a threat of shutdowns every few weeks because we had a series of continuing resolutions in very small increments. And, despite the threat of the shutdowns, only one agency ultimately shut down in 2011. And that was the FAA, and they shut down for a period of a couple of weeks and the summer of 2011. All the other agencies did have appropriations at that time, but the FAA did not, so they had to shut down. So there have been a lot more shutdowns. The problem is there haven't been shutdowns in a couple of years, and there hasn't been a government-wide shutdown since 1995 to 96. So for a lot of people, they haven't lived through it.
Well, I can recall I lived through it. I was working for the government at that point in time, and You know, one of the interesting things is that, you know, I worked in the Office of General Counsel at my agency, and I was instructed that I had, you know, I could not work because I guess that would be, you know, providing voluntary services to the government. There are fiscal law rules about that, like, you know, gift to the government, that sort of thing.
Right.
And so, you know, our office was very strict on that. But then there were other parts of GSA that at the time continued to operate. And I guess they looked at because they were being funded out of a revolving fund. Can you talk a little bit about some of those differences and what it may or may not mean for, I guess, for an agency as to
right.
whether they continue to operate?
Right. Agencies can rely upon a variety of appropriation sources to fund their operations. For example, there's certain money that comes in from multi-year appropriations, or there may be, you know, indefinite appropriations for things like Social Security, but an awful lot of discretionary spending is funded through annual appropriations. But and when you have funding through annual appropriations, again, you've got to have an appropriations bill of some sort, either a temporary continuing resolution or a full year appropriations bill, or the agency cannot spend those money. So if you have an agency that has part of it that is funded by indefinite appropriations and multi-year appropriations, those activities continue. They don't shut down at all. They're not affected by this.
Right. And like in the case of, I think, GSA back in 95, there are parts of it that, you know, was basically are funded based on industrial funding fee revenue,
right.
the charges to other agencies that are then put in a revolving fund. So that money remains available for obligation. You know, I think there's many activities around the government to have that sort of funding, not to the point where you still wouldn't have a shutdown. But so one of the important things there, it seems to me, is that if you're a government contractor or a public or a citizen member of the public, understanding, believe it or not, understanding where the money comes from and how it's handled or what its status is important.
That it's very important. And even if you are funded by annual appropriations, if you're a contractor, for example, and money has already been put on your contract, obligated to your contract, just because there's a lapse in funding doesn't mean that you stop performance.
Right.
To the extent that you can continue performing, you can do so within the limits of the obligated funding.
Right. And isn't in the case, you know, I guess the is kind of is it boiled down to like the Anti-Deficiency Act with regard to when the annual appropriations lapse, a contracting officer, if there is money obligated on the contract, can't make an obligation in advance of an appropriation, right? Is that what
that's
we're
correct.
Following?
That's what the Anti-Deficiency Act says. I mean, the Anti-Deficiency Act implements the constitutional requirement that no money be drawn from the Treasury except when there is an appropriation made by law. And the Anti-Deficiency Act then says that agencies can't enter into contracts or incur obligations when there's no current appropriation that's available to fund them, or, you know, funding from another source like an IFF or other fees that the government may collect for something.
So hence, and that means the government obviously can't, you know, there's no money there to pay the employees, pay contractors, make any kind of obligations, right?
Right, and as you said, the government is precluded from accepting voluntary services or employing personal services that exceed whatever they can pay for out of appropriations.
Yeah, it's kind of...
That's the reason you were told that you had to stay home.
Right.
During the last furlough.
Right, because I was funded out of a different
right.
pot
you
of
You were
money.
Funded out of annual appropriations, and you were deemed to be not an accepted employee, because there are certain exceptions to the rule that the government has to shut down.
Right, and why don't we'll cover some of that in our next segment, but right now we do have to take a break, you know, and maintain our funding stream here at off the shelf. But when we come back, we'll be talking more to Beth Farrell. Beth is a partner at McKenna Long & Aldridge, LLP, and we're talking shutdown once again, deja vu all over again. You're listening to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
CACI delivers innovative information solutions and services to serve America's highest priorities, advancing efficiency and performance with business systems, countering the effects of complex threats with integrated security solutions, providing healthcare solutions for better, more affordable care, defending the nation against cyber threats, and helping veterans with its award-winning career-building program. CACI. Information deployed, solutions advanced, missions accomplished. CACI, ever vigilant.
Welcome back to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today my guest is Beth Farrell. Beth is a partner at McKenna Long and Aldridge LLP, and we're once again talking government shutdown. What does it mean? What, you know, the rules and of the road around it, what people need to know. All that sort of wonderful information, because it is like the movie Groundhog Day. It keeps coming back and coming back and coming back. And Beth, when we took the break, one of the things that I know you wanted to touch on is, you know, the status of various federal employees and who's, I guess, considered essential and that whole dynamic. So I'm going to turn it over to you. Go ahead.
Right. The federal government doesn't shut down completely. Anything that is covered by other than annual appropriations obviously continues. But for the activities that are funded by annual appropriations, there are some exceptions. There are certain statutes that authorize agencies to obligate funds in advance of appropriations. And one very famous example is the Feed and Forage Act. And that is a statute that authorizes the Department of Defense to contract for necessary items for the military, food, fuel, clothing, medical stuff, transportation, and they can do that in advance of an appropriation. So those activities don't stop. And necessary personnel who are involved in that obviously remain working and active during a shutdown period. There also is an exception where activities are needed to protect the safety of human life and protect property.
Okay,
and that is that's the exception that the agencies then rely upon most during the shutdown.
Okay, so like who who would that?
A good example would be air traffic control or the USDA. Obviously, the meat inspectors need to continue to inspect meat.
Right, for a public safety.
That's right. It's a public safety thing. Air traffic control.
Right. And
healthcare services. Certain healthcare services would need to continue.
Now, it's interestingly, so those folks are potentially and, you know, obviously essential to public safety. If there are contractors supporting their mission in this circumstances, what happens to them?
If the contractors are supporting missions within these accepted or exempted categories, they continue without any problem, even if they might need additional funds put on contracts.
Right.
The government is authorized to do that because it falls within these exceptions. You know, another good example would be the people who are required to maintain the physical security of facilities.
Okay, yeah. So, and so you could have, you know, government, like I guess the Federal Protective Officers or Service, plus you might have contractor folks, right?
That's correct. But obviously, you need to protect the property of the United States, and that means that, you know, key information systems. You can't just walk off the job and, you know, leave everybody. You got to have somebody maintaining the servers.
Right.
For the IT department, you have to have building security. Those are physical assets that the government needs to protect.
So I assume some, you know, organizations that have cybersecurity, you know, personnel or contractors supporting that, I would presume that, you know, they would be still on the job, right?
Not all of them. I mean, one of the interesting things, and we'll talk about this later in the OMB guidance, is that you know, they make clear that not all IT functions are exempted.
Really? Well, why?
There are only ones that fall in one of these exempt categories.
Okay. Okay. So it would have to be someone actually working, theoretically, potentially, as, you know, to manage the cybersecurity protections that an agency has in place for its IT.
That's correct. Right. And, you know, an example of a function that may not be continued is, you know, keeping the website up to date for an agency.
No,
that may be an activity that is not deemed necessary to protect the assets and the property of the United States government.
Well, and we know they're all up to date right now.
That's right.
Just joking out there, listeners. Interestingly, too, I guess, is this, I'm just curious about the Social Security Administration. You know, my understanding is they're going to keep, you know, lots and lots of employees at work. Is it because of the way they're funded? Or, I mean, it seems to me that has a, you know, like cutting the checks and for millions and millions of Americans. How does that, have you looked at that area at all?
Right. There has been some legal guidance that has been provided throughout the years from the Attorney General on what the preservation of human life and property actually means and what other activities agencies can be involved in. And they say that there is a category of services that are provided by federal employees that are exempt because their continuation is necessarily implied because of another exception. And some of those would be for the Social Security Administration. So if they need to keep people on the job in order to administer programs that are not funded by annual appropriations, you know, and that includes a lot of the entitlement programs, whatever people and people who cut the checks and support the IT systems that keep those programs running, by implication, those people are accepted too. And that's the guidance that has been provided by the Attorney General back in 1995 and is still guidance that agencies rely upon in determining who may continue and not continue. And that's the reason some agencies, like the Social Security Administration, tend to have a higher percentage of employees who are accepted from the shutdown.
That's interesting. Do you want to talk a little bit about the OMB guidance that's out there? I mean, it clearly sounds like you've gone over all this stuff, Beth.
Right, I have. You know, the OMB guidance is pretty much the same each time. And OMB's job is to tell the agencies you have to have orderly shutdown plans in place. And if a shutdown appears to be imminent, they ask the agencies to update those plans. So the guidance that they issued a couple of weeks ago said you have to have shutdown plans. Provide a detailed plan to me on what you believe under the law you can continue and what you have to stop, and give us numbers of employees who are going to be retained and furloughed. And they provided guidance from the Attorney General opinions, one I just referenced a minute ago, which was from 1995, but there were a couple of earlier opinions in the 80s. And those are legal opinions from the Attorney General on how far these exceptions extend. So they provide that information to the agency, and they go, here's your guidance, now you figure it out. In addition, this time, and they have frequently asked questions, and a lot of those questions have to do with what the impact of contractors is going to be. And these were answers that they prepared in 2011 and are rolling out again now that we have another threat of a shutdown.
Well, in the next segment, we'll talk a little bit. We'll get into do a deep dive on what contractors need to think about with regard to shutdown situations. But I'm just curious, so the OMB provides this guidance to the agencies, and the agencies then, you know, implement or put together, formulate their plan. Does anyone, like, take a look at, you know, who they've deemed to be essential? You know, is anybody watching sort of what happens with regard to an agency's decision and who's going to continue to report to work or not? I'm just curious. That's it.
Well, I don't know that they are. I think that the agencies work with their own counsel to make determinations of who within the agency falls within certain categories. I do know back in 95 to 96, in advance of the shutdown, GAO was asked to make a report to Congress to survey the reports and provide information on the total number of people who are going to be impacted by the shutdown. And what was very interesting about that is that the percentage of workers who were going to be furloughed, which is all over the map.
Right. Yeah.
They didn't look at DOD numbers, which obviously is a very significant portion of the discretionary spending. But some of the agencies with the lowest percentage of employees that were going to remain on the job were ones like the Department of the Interior was about 28%. The agencies with the highest percentage of workers who were going to be exempted and would remain on the job were the USDA at 100%, the VA
wow.
at about 85%, the Department of Justice with about 75%, and the State Department with about 70%. But those things are you can understand why they have high percentages.
Sure, sure.
Because USDA inspecting food, the Veterans Administration, obviously a lot of health care and other important
right.
things for the military, Department of Justice with investigations and other things where they, you know, protect
the
United States. And
yeah.
the State Department, again, is engaged in foreign relations, and that is one of the accepted categories. National
Beth,
security.
Now we do have to take, Beth, we'll have to take a break and come back and finish that list. We can talk a little bit about what contractors need to know. As well when they're thinking about this. But right now we do have to take that break. My guest today is Beth Farrell. She's a partner at McKenna Long & Aldridge LLP, and you are listening to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio 1500 AM.
These days it seems everyone's talking about the new normal, but federal agencies have a chance to define it. How will you shape your future? Turn to Deloitte. We understand what makes America work and how it can work better. With our private sector insight and public sector experience, we can help you rethink, reduce, and restructure, or even change the game. See how at Deloitte.com/federal. Wherever you need to go, Deloitte sees you there.
Welcome back to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today, my guest is Beth Farrell. Beth is a partner at McKenna Long & Aldridge LLP, and we're going through the shutdown scenarios once again. So, Beth, when we finished up the last segment, you had described sort of the process of OMB issuing their guidance, and the agencies have to figure out who's essential, who's not, and it involves like consulting with management, consulting with the Office of General Counsel, typically, and going through making these determinations. So that's that's sort of the preparation for what happens. And then I know there's costs associated with shutting down. It seems like to me that there may be more costs associated with shutting down than continuing normal operations. Does that make sense to you?
Well, I think it does make sense. I mean, you think about the inefficiency that is caused by the threat of a shutdown. Everybody who works for the federal government has the same perspective, which is, am I going to be furloughed? And if furloughed, I'm going to be furloughed without pay. And there's always the threat that Congress will not appropriate money later on to give back pay to these people who have been furloughed without pay. So you can imagine how that not a whole lot of work is getting done while people are trying to figure out are they exempt or not exempt. And then managers are trying to determine what items of work can continue because they fall into the accepted or essential category. And that has to be done at a pretty low level. You have to determine whether groups within the government are exempt or, in certain instances, individuals. You can't keep on the whole IT department, for example, but you can keep on certain people. So it requires a lot of effort, and the federal government spends money every time they do this. It costs money to shut down, and then it costs money to get geared back up.
Right, and it seems to me there's also there's ripple effects, right? If you're managing a program, and you're at a certain milestone in that program that involves you coming to work and performing something, or executing on something, that may get delayed, right? Or you may be shut down from doing that for a while, and then all of a sudden you got to ramp back up. I mean, it could have ripple effects across not just government, but also into the private sector as well. It seems because, for example, in the context of contractors, the uncertainty in maintaining team, bid proposal teams, theoretically, or during the course of a shutdown, or moving to certain points along the milestones of a procurement, and delaying those could theoretically increase costs. Is Does that make sense to you?
No, it absolutely does.
Right.
And there are contractors who assert claims for the delay and the disruption that is caused by either not having government people available that they need in order to administer government contracts and that delay or disrupt their performance, or also when they have been affected by the total or partial shutdown of a government facility that is necessary for them to use in performance. And all of these costs ultimately are borne by the federal government.
So that's a great sort of segue to the next topic I wanted to talk to you about is from a contractor's perspective, best practices in a shutdown environment. I just wanted to give you an opportunity to talk about, what contractors need to think about with regard to shutdown. If you mentioned claims and how performance costs could increase due to the shutdown and how you need to protect yourself. But I want to give you a chance to sort of talk through some of these. And the first one I want to throw out, because I know you've written extensively on this and you've talked a lot about it, but you talk about determining the nature of the contract work. What does that mean?
Right. You need to determine whether the agency has identified your contract as providing some essential activity that's necessary to protect life or property and is accepted from the shutdown. If so, the people within the government that are necessary to assist you with performance will be made available. If additional money is needed for your contract, it will be made available, and you go ahead and you perform.
Right, and I guess you pass that same guidance on to your subcontractors?
That's correct. If they are assisting in the performance of this essential activity, they too remain on the job.
Okay, and then you get another thing you talk about is assessing cash flow.
Right. For those entities that continue performing, you may not get paid. There may be a delay in payment. If you are performing an activity that has to shut down because you rely upon a government facility or rely upon government personnel who are not going to be made available to you because they're on furlough, then you may be disrupted, and those people may be the precise people that are needed to review your invoices, accept product, and approve your invoices for payment. And if those people are not around, there's going to be a delay in payment. Now, ultimately, contractors would be entitled to interest under the Prompt Payment Act if payment is delayed, but it certainly means that there's a disruption in cash flow. And then for prime contractors, they also need to determine what the impact is going to be on their subcontractors. Some prime contractors insist upon clauses in subcontracts that say, I have no obligation as the prime to pay you, the subcontractor, until I receive payment from the government. And in those instances, there is no legal obligation for the prime contractors to pay the subcontractors. But I've had clients in the past who have come to me and said, I know I don't have any obligation to do it, but are there any instances where I should go ahead and pay subcontractors? And the answer is absolutely yes. There are certain subcontractors, particularly small businesses, who cannot weather a disruption in the cash flow. And if they are critical to your performance, you may want to go ahead and pay them, even though you have no legal obligation to do so, until you're paid by the government.
Right. That's good business, right?
Right.
Maintaining, if you have someone who's critical to your team and you know that they are going to be under stress as a result of a shutdown, that's an investment worth making, right?
Absolutely.
So, another area you talk about is, reviewing the contract type and, the funding status. What is that all about for contractors?
Right. As the OMB guidance makes clear, contractors are entitled to, and in fact required to, continue performance even if the government shut down, to the extent that they're able to do so, and to do so within the limits of the funding that has been made available for their contracts. For fixed price contracts, they are usually 100% funded at the beginning of the contract, so there is no funding impediment to the contractor's continuing performance. If, however, it is an incrementally funded contract, and the contractor is awaiting an installment of funding in the beginning of October, you know, for example, this year.
Sure. Yep.
They and that money is not made available. They have to stop performing. They cannot perform in advance of the obligations. So contractors need to look at their contracts and determine the funding source if it looks like the more money is needed. And if it is annual appropriations as a source, they may be out of luck and they may need to stop performance. If it's multi-year money and an increment is needed, the agency is absolutely free to make another allotment of funds from that appropriation source.
Right, and how do options play in this?
Well, if your option is going to be funded by an annual appropriation, again, you don't have the money if there's a shutdown. The government is, you know, unless it's one of those accepted functions. For example, you're in charge of security at a nuclear facility for the government. That is will be an accepted function, and if there is an option exercise that they need to do to in order to keep you on the job, they are authorized to do that because it fits within one of the exceptions, even though there isn't money available that day.
Right, and you know, Beth, I have no option but to take our last break. So when we come back, we'll finish our discussion with Beth Farrell. Beth is a partner at McKenna Long & Aldridge, LLP, and we'll continue to discuss what contractors need to think about with regard to the shutdown. You are listening to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio 1500 AM.
The mission of government involves critical efforts to improve national defense, economic security, health services, and citizens' lives. The strategy and technology consultants of Booz Allen Hamilton are proud to help government address cyber threats, reform the financial system, modernize infrastructure, and protect our nation. For nearly 100 years, Booz Allen has partnered with clients to deliver results that endure. To see Booz Allen's ideas in action, visit BoozAllen.com.
Welcome back to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today my guest is Beth Farrell. Beth is a partner at McKenna Long & Aldridge, LLP. And we have been talking shutdown and the do's and don'ts, what contractors need to go, just the whole context of it, the history of it, all those wonderful things that we, Beth, seem to talk about, you know, on a regular basis over the last couple of years. Like, you're a recurring guest. So, but it's
right.
It's wonderful to have you on the show. So let's continue the discussion. We were working on checklists for contractors. And, you know, next item on the checklist that I have is assess the impact of furloughs on performance. What is that all about?
Well, contractors need to communicate with their contracting officers on the status of government personnel, because if the program activity is deemed to be an accepted activity, then government personnel that are necessary for your contract administration and necessary for you to interact with for performance are going to remain on the job and they will not be furloughed. But contractors won't know that. They'll have to talk with their contracting officer and find out what the agency's view is about their activity. And they also need to find out if there are any facilities that they need for performance or whether they will be shut down or remain open or partially shut down. They also need to communicate with the contracting officer on whether a stop work order will be issued. If you remember back in 2011 when the FAA shut down, they decided to go ahead and issue stop work orders on about 250 construction projects that they had going on, because they knew that they were not exempted activities, and they knew that the having government personnel at the construction site to make sure that everything was going in accordance with the contract requirements was critical to them. And so in order to avoid the situation where people were performing without government inspectors, they decided that they would go ahead and issue stop work orders on all of those projects.
Really? And if if the project was, you know, building a new screening facility for incoming cargo, would that continue theoretically, possibly?
Well, the agency would have to make a determination of whether that was essential to the protection of people or property.
Right. Would that kind of determination depend on, in that case, you know, if you were building a new facility to provide security, you know, you already have a security infrastructure in place, so you're merely just going to improve it. So it's already being performed. I assume they would say, okay, continue performance of the way you're doing it and delay, you know, the improvement. Does that make sense?
That is a possibility. And in fact, a lot of the work can continue without government people being available. And in fact, one of the things contractors need to do is if they find out that their contracting officer or contracting officer's technical representative or other people are going to be furloughed, they need to figure out what work they can continue with.
Right.
They don't necessarily have to stop performing. And so they need to work with their contracting officer to make sure that if they continue performing, that the government doesn't come in after the fact and say, I need you to redo something because I wasn't there to watch it or to work with you on it. They also need to consider whether there are workarounds that they can do to accomplish work, even though they might not have full access to facilities or full access to government people. And they need to talk with their subcontractors about what the shutdown plans are from the agency, what direction they've gotten from contracting officer, what information they've gotten from the contracting officer about whether they're accepted and what government people will be made available, and then to make sure that the subcontractors have their own plans in place and that it's, you know, a very coordinated activity, as coordinated as you can be with a shutdown.
Right. So it all flows down and you've got something in place that makes sense for that particular contract. And I guess, you know, at the end of the day, you want to reduce your, if you're a contractor, obviously you want to reduce your risk, right?
That's correct.
Right. To that end, you know, the last, item on the checklist is prepare for claims. So how do you prepare for claims?
Well, the contractors need to document the adverse impact that they have had on their performance as a result of the shutdown, and either it's because there have been a lack of facilities or lack of government personnel available, they should make a written narrative and keep other records, such as project logs or daily reports, that document how it has adversely impacted them.
Right. And so, and also in that kind of, you know, one of the things I was thinking about when you were talking about subcontractors and, you know, paying subcontractors, even though you may not have the money if you're the prime, just because of the importance of it. Do contractors also have to make decisions, like if they delay something in terms of an implementation, you know, they, it may be one of those situations where if they do that, it's going to cost them more money. So they need to think about whether they're going to file a potentially document to file a claim, or alternatively, they may decide, I'm going to go ahead and execute on that piece of my contract performance so that I can maintain my schedule. You know, is that sort of the kind of the business decisions folks have to make?
Right. There are business decisions like that, but they should make those in consultation with the contracting officer, because if you intend to continue performance without government personnel, you should let the contracting officer know. And then if he doesn't object, he won't be able to object later on.
Right. Very, very good advice. Hey, one area we haven't talked about is like new contracts or pending, I guess, potential contracts. Do you have any thoughts on those and what contractors need to think about?
Yes. You know, the beginning of the fiscal year is always a time when we see a big flurry of new contracts, contract awards. So contractors have, in a lot of instances, submitted proposals, and those proposals are in the process of being evaluated by the government, and contractors may expect award, you know, within the near future. And that all may be disrupted and put on hold by the shutdown, because those people, you know, most of those people are not critical to the protection of life and property. So those government employees will be sent home. They will be furloughed. They will not be evaluating proposals. They will not, you know, a lot of that process just sort of grinds to a halt. And, you know, for contractors who are expecting to get a contract award at the beginning of October and perhaps have, you know, have people ready to start performance, I mean, it can have an adverse impact on them.
Right. And so in that an adverse impact in that you have to maintain your team, right, for a longer period of time. You're paying those bid and proposal costs. It sets the clock back for both government and industry with regard to awards. And that has cost both ways.
It does have cost both ways. And, you know, agencies plan, we're going to have a need that will, you know, start on a certain date. So we want to make a contract award on that date. They don't contract just to contract with people. I mean, they obviously have a need for something, and that need will be unmet what, you know, if they cannot award a contract. So it makes the government process of issuing solicitations and getting proposals and evaluating proposals and having an orderly, smooth process to the award of a contract, it disrupts that for them.
Right. Well, and Beth, we're approaching the end of the show, but I want to ask you, so what were you doing back in 1995 during that shutdown?
I was working at a law firm doing government contracts work and advising contractors on what the implications of a shutdown are. So it is deja vu for me, too.
Well, yeah, that's and it's definitely a it's a recurring theme lately, right? I mean,
it is a recurring theme. We spent a lot of time, as you recall, in 2011 worrying about a shutdown.
Yeah, and the costs are just the time. For example, even the time that we've spent today talking about it, you can multiply that by so many times with regard to people across the private sector and in government trying to anticipate what's going to happen and plan for the uncertainties.
That's right. I mean, I saw a report one time that said that 80% of the contractors in the Washington, D.C. Area were adversely impacted by the 95-96 shutdown.
Right. Wasn't that, what was that, 17 days or so, something like that?
It was about 3 weeks. Yeah. It went from December 16th to January 6th.
Right. And I'm trying to remember what I did those 17 days when I couldn't.
Well, a lot of people were on holiday during that time.
Yeah. Well,
whether they wanted to be on holiday
exactly,
or not.
Exactly, exactly. Well, Beth, I want to thank you for being on the show. My guest today has been Beth Farrell. She's a partner at McKenna Long & Aldridge, LLP. And you have been listening to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio 1500 AM.
You've been listening to Off the Shelf with Roger Waldron of the Coalition for Government Procurement. If you missed any part of this program, you can hear the entire show on our website, federalnewsradio.com. Off the Shelf, only on Federal News Radio 1500 AM.